thank you guys for asking me to share my story, and hopefully it'll be a benefit to some people out there. I'm going to start with, I found myself trying to prepare for this, and as I was doing that, I felt so overwhelmed by so many topics and so many things that I could talk about, and consequently, I kind of left it a little bit and just going to let my heart guide me into this one. I'll give you a real brief bio, a brief history of how I got here and who I am. I was born to an alcoholic father and a enabling depressive mother, the fifth out of six children. By the time I came along, they had nothing for kids. So consequently, I was sort of left to raise myself. Never had boundaries, never had much direction, never had nurturing. They put food on the table for me and kept me clothed, but they were both checked out for their own reasons. So I kind of learned to sort of figure my world out through what little clues were given me. And I developed this idea that because of the way my parents treated me, I wasn't lovable or worthy in any way. And it kind of grew. As I grew, it became more elaborate. It took the form of a personal critic that berated me whenever I wasn't perfect. It took the form of hypervigilance to make sure that my behavior was getting a positive response, because I never knew the rules. I just knew that I wasn't given that thing that I wanted, which was the love and nurturing. So I knew on some level as a little child, I knew it was something that I had done. So consequently, I was tuned into other people who I wanted to love me. And the environment within my family was one of denial and competition, and the abuse was pretty subtle. growing up, we called it teasing, and it was okay to tease, especially the younger ones. It was okay to tease them, and if they complained or reacted in any way, they weren't being a good sport. And it wasn't until I got to ACA that I understood that that was my family's word for abuse, was tease. And just learning how to put up with that and to get by, one of the strategies was to remain as silent as possible, to sort of stay off the radar. And if somebody did abuse me, just to suck it up and pretend that it didn't bother me. So consequently, I kind of developed that idea of being, you know, if I were to claim a role in the dynamic of an alcoholic family, I would be the lost child, because I just didn't want anything. I didn't want any consequence for my behavior. I didn't want to be rejected any more than I was. So I didn't risk anything. When I was 12 or 13, I found drugs and alcohol, and that was an answer for me, because that got me out of my head, and that got me out of these feelings that haunted me, this idea that I wasn't good enough or that there was something I needed to do. And it silenced my critic when I was high. So I made it all through high school as an adequate student. You know, part of my adaptation as an ACA person was to learn how to please. And one of the ways that I learned how to please was perform. And so I was able to perform and do a good job. And I was raised with this work ethic that if you're a hard worker, then you're okay. Nothing you do is wrong. My father taught me that. As long as you work hard, you can, you know, anything else is acceptable. So because of that, I was successful. I made it through high school. I had a few brushes with the law, but nothing serious. Made it through college. During that time, I wrecked two cars, and neither one of them, it never crossed my mind that I had a problem with alcohol, even though both times I did that, I was drunk. Never had anybody tell me that. And I just thought my drinking was, you know, that's normal. That's what people do, right? And I had this idea that when I became an adult, that I was going to follow in my parents' footsteps, because that was what I knew. So that meant getting married and having a kid. But I had this problem because I couldn't be intimate with anybody. I couldn't really be emotionally intimate, and I couldn't trust anybody because I learned not to trust love or intimacy. So the way I would dance around that sort of thing would be to try to fall madly in love really quickly and get a high off of that feeling and that adrenaline. And then 2 or 3 months into it, boom, suddenly I'd run because it got serious. And that was a strategy that I used, because the high would validate me. And then when it came down to the commitment and the intimacy, I couldn't do it. It was just impossible. Yet I yearned for it. So along came a woman who we fell madly in love, and boom, within that 3 month time, we're pregnant. So like my dad, I'm going to do the right thing. We get married, and it was a pretty miserable relationship. I mean, it was miserable. It lasted 7 years. We didn't really harm each other too much, but we created 2 children. And I made it through that time again, I never considered myself an alcoholic, but alcohol was part of our relationship. Got divorced after 7 years. I was single again, and that's when the drinking really picked up in the late 90s, or it would be the late 80s, early 90s for me. The drinking and partying once I was single, it was crazy. You know, that drowned it all out. Around 2000, I met somebody else, and I did exactly the same thing. Got unplanned pregnancy and got married. And that was a horrible marriage. And besides emotionally, it was a horrible choice for me financially. And I look back on it, and I just wonder why that happened. Why did that happen? And, of course, after some recovery in ACA, I have those answers. So around 2005, I realized that alcohol was – I was living my life to get high. And I knew that I had to do something. So I found AA, and I got sober. And even in my sobriety, I kept repeating those same patterns over and over again with relationships and intimacy. And I realized that I had a problem. You know, even though I kept expecting somebody to come along that would be the right person, because I was always waiting for that thing outside of me to make me right, because I needed you to validate me. And I would act out this parent thing with my romantic partners, seeking to get their validation and their love to repair this wound that I had that was so great, and I couldn't even see it. So I'd act that out. I actually got meshed in one relationship that was really, really dysfunctional. It was just a push-pull thing. There was all kinds of – she was a narcissist. I was a pleaser. I was an enabler, and it was absolutely atrocious looking back on it. But I had to do that, and I did that in sobriety. And along the way, there was a couple others too. And finally, around 2017, I was hopeless. There was no possible way that I understood that I could not have an intimate relationship with a woman. I understood it was not a possibility for me to do that unless something changed. And I finally realized that it wasn't her. It wasn't her that was the problem. It was me. And I was really frustrated, beating the hell out of myself. You know, my critic was having a field day. And I didn't understand why. I didn't understand why I couldn't do it. I just couldn't see. I mean, you know, I'm relatively successful in life. I've got, you know, I had enough income to meet my needs. You know, I've done a lot of things. But why can't I do this thing? And once I read the laundry list, I understood. I remember that. I remember the first meeting I went to. I read that laundry list and I thought, oh, shit, you know, this explains everything. This explains the seeking approval through relationships and the dysfunction. This explains the alcoholism. This explains everything. This is why I am. And it's the greatest realization that came with that is that it's not my fault. I learned this as a child. This was my experience. And this is who I am. I am that wounded person. And that was the start for me of the process of learning to accept and love myself, because I couldn't do it. You know, when I came here, I had such crappy self-esteem. I didn't believe, if you told me I did a good job, I'd secretly say to myself, man, they just don't know what they're thinking about. You know, they don't get it, because I just knew in myself, my critic told me I couldn't have done a good job. Could not have a relationship. I was terrified of my bosses. I was terrified of my ex-wife. And I put these people in authority, and I was afraid, and I was passive. I sought comfort through these just very quick sexual relationships, because that's all I knew. I mean, I knew that sexuality meant that somebody liked me. And I had this idea that it was love, because I didn't know anything else. I didn't. So, I used relationships as a drug too. I felt, you know, I understood I was sober. I wasn't doing substance, but I transferred that sort of addiction to relationships. So I was using that as a high. And, I was just really, really spun out. And I didn't know why. I'd been sober for over a decade. And I just thought, man, my life should be better than this. And again, I came to ACA and I started understanding that there is this child within me, this guy, this little kid that grew up in this way that probably wasn't very good for him. And he never got the love he wanted. He's a pretty loving guy, and he's funny, and he's cheerful, and he likes to have fun, but he never found out about that part of him. And I never found out about that part of him, because I spent my whole life avoiding that person, avoiding that heart, because I was so terrified of what I was going to find. You know, I had the idea that I wasn't lovable. I wasn't. I couldn't be, or else my parents would have loved me. So I spent my whole life avoiding that deep, dark thing about me that I couldn't see, but I knew it was there. I knew it was there because I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to see it, because then that would be it. I wouldn't exist if I saw that thing. And what ACA taught me is that thing doesn't exist. What I learned about myself was told to me by other people who really didn't have my best interests at heart. You know, they were tied up in their own pain, and that's all they could offer me. And consequently, I didn't learn how to love myself. I didn't learn who I was. I didn't learn to trust myself, and I certainly couldn't trust other people. And when it came to issues of intimacy, I was just flummoxed. It's crazy. So I started doing a lot of inner child work. I started going back and developing a relationship with myself. And I want to show you this picture of me as that child. This was me as a little guy. And I got to get to know him. I got to get to know that little boy. And now I can love him and hold him and have a dialogue with him. And when I'm feeling spun out or upset or anything that doesn't have to do with this thing or whatever's happening to me right now in the present, I can go back and talk to that little boy, because it's probably him that's feeling upset. And you know, I have that opportunity to be kind and loving to that part of me that needs, because I was taught that anybody that needs is a burden. That's what my parents taught me. So I get to go back and rewire that stuff. And you know, through this program, I get to see that I get to find out who I am. And that's not a bad person. I'm actually a pretty decent guy, you know. And part of that self-understanding and discovering, you know, it talks about in the promises, discovering my real identity by loving and accepting myself. And that's the place that I finally come to. And it's a process. It doesn't happen because I will it, or it doesn't happen because I do a four step, or it doesn't happen because I make amends to people, or it doesn't happen because I just really, really want it. It happens because I work on it all the time. And, you know, I work on loving myself because I have to, because for 60 years I didn't love myself. And so I have to turn that around. And it's you know, I sort of, when I'm struggling, I use the analogy that it's, you know, if I'm going to get good at anything, I need to practice that. And sometimes being good at loving myself requires practice too, because it doesn't come naturally to me. Or, you know, I have to learn to let it come. So through that process, you know, I still bump into it day to day. And, you know, I'm always catching myself. I always, you know, on my good days, I find it really interesting, you know, that I think, you know, my favorite example is I always know I'm going to have it, that I've got something going on when I'm driving to work and everybody on the road's a shitty driver. Then I know it's like, okay, that's me. You know, something's going on. What is it? You know, and then I can stop and have that dialogue and talk about it and ask that little boy, what's happening? You know, what's going on? How do you feel? You know, that was another part of my upbringing. He said, I couldn't feel, man. That was way too scary. So it was better just to shut it down. Just shut it down and remain neutral. And I'm learning, you know, through recovery, through ACA, I get that crazy luxury of feeling stuff. And I'm not terrified that I'm going to feel something that's uncomfortable. That's okay. That has flavor and texture too. And it's not going to kill me like I thought it might, you know. And part of that thing is I've seen it affect my life in so many ways, and it's, I can't tell you really how grateful I am for the changes that I've been able to experience through this process and through this program. And, you know, the fellowship is just crucial. I went to one of these outdoor meetings that we were talking about earlier last week, and, you know, during my share, I talked about testimony, and that's exactly what it is. With the program and with this group is that I'm surrounded by people that understand who I am and understand my vulnerability and accept it, and they protect it too. So that allows me to be vulnerable to myself. And you know, I get to demonstrate that to myself and with support, with this great big extended family where I can come in and tell you how I feel, and I can come in and tell you shameful things or things that I felt shame about. Whether they are or not, truly, but I felt shame about, and you can accept them without judgment. And by demonstrating that and by accepting me that way, I can model that for myself, and I can accept who I am. And it's pretty remarkable, actually. So one of the things that, you know, I came into ACA because I was hopeless about having a relationship, and I knew it. I just knew that it was not going to be in any possibility for me. I just couldn't, because I'd been through, I don't know, dozens of failed relationships, and they all had a very similar pattern. And I knew that I had this issue of intimacy. When I would think about it, when I would think about being in a sustainable, permanent relationship with a woman, I would get this big knot in my stomach, and it felt like I was like, you know, somebody was going to ask way too much of me, and there's no possible way I could sustain that. And along with that came this idea of like, I don't deserve it. You know, the irony, I think back on my, you know, relationship travails, and if a woman liked me and was a good woman and was healthy, I'd reject her because it was just, you know, that wasn't what I wanted. I wanted the crazy drama and the shit that I grew up with, because that was familiar. And, yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. So anyhow, as part of this thing, I started learning about who I was, and I started learning that, you know, I started looking at that picture of that little boy that I showed you, and learning how to have compassion for him, and learning how to have compassion for those things. You know, I don't know about you, but I reflect on my life, and I have a lot of shameful things, and through the steps to be able to go back to those things and look at them honestly and have compassion for the child or the man that took part in them and understand why he took part in them. And along with that comes this idea that, you know, when I first started this program, I was pretty pissed off at my parents because I really felt like I got screwed. that I didn't get that childhood that would nurture me and love me. All, you know, here, my mantra was all I wanted was to be loved. And that was that, you know, how fucking hard is that? Well, it was hard for them and they couldn't do it. So I just have to accept that as part of my past and be grateful that I don't have to keep practicing their legacy because they were wounded too. I mean, I'm sure they struggled with their demons. And so part of this process is learning to forgive them. Both of them are dead. They died, you know, within the last decade. But to forgive them as part of my history is also to forgive me for participating in that history and to accept that that's my path, because it is. And anyhow, I want to go back to the relationship thing, because that's one of the crucial things that's happened for me in this program, is that I met somebody in this program, and that was 2 years ago. We started having a romantic relationship, and it has been the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for me. I never, ever imagined that I could do that. But by being honest about how I feel, by being very, very straight about my motives, by letting her in and allowing her to see my worst, by accepting her unconditionally. And it all comes down to communication. When I feel like I'm going off the rails, which I do sometimes, I mean, I'll start pushing her away and I'll start, you know, I get an idea in my head that, you know, she always wears that funky pink t-shirt and goddamn, I hate that thing. So that just makes her horrible. And I'll go to her and I'll talk to her and I say, Ken, I'm having this weird feeling about your t-shirt today. And then we both go, oh, well, but, you know, she'll tell me, figure it out, and I'll figure it out. And we have the space. We've learned to have the space because to trust each other, because we trust ourselves. We trust ourselves. So I get that gift of intimacy. I mean, I never, ever imagined it. And I never would have, you know, if you would have asked me when I first got to ACA, like, okay, you know, you would have told me, okay, guy, you're going to like, you know, you're going to be able to pull this relationship thing off, or would have asked me what I wanted. I would have told you, oh, well, I just want to get out, you know, some vague thing. And I never would have expected to be able to participate in a loving and sustainable relationship. But I did. I got that. I got that. And, man, it takes work. I mean, you know, you hear that. Everybody hears it. But when I drop off all my baggage and I stay here, right here, in the present moment, and I don't let that little boy interfere with my relationship now, but I acknowledge his feelings, but I don't let him take charge of it, then things really, really work well. And they do. And, I don't know what else to say. It's just, I'm grateful. I'm just really, really grateful. And I think, you know, I look back on my path through life and contrast that person I was, you know, 30 years ago to who I am now, and radical difference. Even 5-10 years ago, still incredibly different to who I am today. And I just think, man, you know, I didn't really ask for this, but it came my way, and you know, I need to be really grateful for that grace, you know, and that, you know, that magic that came into my life, because this is that thing that I always wanted, you know. Not only do I get to like hang out with myself and really sort of like the stuff I do, and you know, I can tell that critic to back off. I can manage it. I'm get along. My relationship with my boss is so different now than it was when I first started working for him. You know, he's more like a peer. I get so much more out of life, and it's not all good stuff. I mean, sometimes I feel crappy, but what I get is to feel crappy and not to have to change that or wrestle it or force it or stuff it or, you know, or act it out on somebody, pretend I don't feel that way and then act it out. You know, I get to be honest with myself and with other people, and it's pretty remarkable. And it takes, you know, like anything, there's no magic bullet. It just takes some work and awareness and a little bit of confidence and some support of the group, and you know, keep moving on. just keep moving on. And, you know, I can't speak for everybody else's experience, but, you know, when I confronted those terrifying things and when I just sort of looked them in the eye and I could take a deep breath and see they weren't quite as scary as I'd spent years believing they were and that I was okay. And, you know, and I still have this relationship with this critic in me. I mean, that just doesn't magically disappear, but I have a way more effective ways of dealing with it. And so it has less and less influence on me and how I feel about myself as time goes on because I practice with it more. And, you know, obviously being in a romantic, sustainable relationship with somebody allows me to practice being in a relationship with somebody too, you know. And part of that is practicing being in a relationship with myself. I can't, you know, there's some certain things that I do as a routine. I try to meditate every day. I try to journal whenever I'm spinning out. Usually there's an answer there somewhere. I try to be especially aware of whether or not my feelings come from some physical part of me, because if they do, they're generally probably not, don't have anything to do with what's going on in the immediate. I just try to be aware and to feel and to lean in and accept, you know, and, that's just part of the practice. The group is, I couldn't have got where I was without this program, without this group and the support, because I wouldn't have done it. I would not have done it alone. I could not have confessed to myself. My denial was so great. I could not have confessed to myself, but I can confess to you. And you'll support that, which is a wonderful thing. So, I don't know. I guess just to wrap it up, I'm grateful to be here. And, you know, it's pretty wild. And sometimes I look at my life now and I go, wow. Okay, I guess, yeah, you do. You do deserve this. You are worthy. You can do this. It's okay. It's okay to do this. You deserve all the good things that are coming your way. And, I can never do that before. I can never do it because I didn't think I deserved it. I loved it. You know, I didn't think I was worthy. But I do. I mean, it's good. It's a good thing. So anyhow, I'm happy to be here tonight and share with you guys. And hopefully there was a message there for someone. And I think that's probably about all the juice I have in me right now. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much, John. Please join everybody in thanking John.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
So